Steve Brown is joining us this morning. Steve is also, of course, the spokesperson for Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan. Steve, first off, how you been, pal? Well,
Tom, I listened to the ticket giveaway for the Street Machine Nationals. I remember when those were in Springfield, probably 20 years ago now. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was just people with cool cars having some fun, largely well-behaved. And I almost wish I had an open weekend. I'd come down and check that out.
Well,
It's been, a busy week, a week full of some disappointing, surprising developments. A fellow who I worked with for a long time, resigned from his positions, and we'll move on to try and create a stronger message that there are places with people who have complaints about misconduct or bullying to take those complaints to have them addressed. And that's just the continuing steps that we're making in the House of Representatives. And I suspect you'll see the same kind of actions in a broader way across other parts of government.
I think when it came to the state of Illinois, that the fact of, that we needed this inspector in place and wasn't there for years, that's one of the problems that we had here, isn't it?
Well, I'll say yes. But at the time, to the awareness that the speaker had and that I had as an advisor to him, the claims, the complaints that were there were not of the nature that warranted bringing somebody into the position. There did not appear to be a reason to act. When the speaker had the hearing that we had in the fall that was dealing with legislation, and Denise Rockmeyer came to testify at that hearing and made her accusations, that's the first he learned of that level of accusation, and then he moved along with the other leaders to appoint Julia Porter as the interim legislative inspector general.
But, I mean, are you kind of in a tight spot when you're looking at the speaker because there are accusations involving the speaker, while at the same time the speaker's been largely tasked or at least taking on the responsibility of developing a system to deal with accusations like this? So you've really got a duet of issues here when it comes to the speaker specifically.
You do, and I can say that each time he was made aware personally of developments, he acted. And so I think that's the important thing to really examine. Do we need more to make sure that people don't behave badly, don't act badly? Those kinds of training processes for the House of Representatives, for the Democrats, were in place. They'll be expanded because obviously it doesn't appear they're doing enough. And move forward. And people who largely political people who are political opponents say, he should step aside. Well, that's not going to happen. So you can move that right off your list of things to talk about. He'll be there. We're going to work to elect Democrats in the fall. We're going to elect to help J.B. Pritzker get elected. And we're happy there's a budget. That's that shouldn't have to be viewed as an accomplishment, but in the last several years of the savage approach Bruce Rauner's had to funding government, we're glad to see it happen.
I very often find that if you take the time and patience to look and listen to a thing, that you very often find the subject is the absence of things. And you just talked about the calls for resignation on the Speaker of the House from largely Republicans, but a few Democrats as well. The absence of a thing, J.B. Pritzker nor Bruce Rauner are saying Madigan should resign. And the absence of those two items, I think, is worthy of note, Steve.
Well, it's a good point. I think Mr. Pritzker and the Speaker have come to know each other. I think they will work well together once Mr. Pritzker takes office. Governor Rauner, likes to use the speaker as a punching bag, if you will. That hasn't worked very well for him. Neither has the Blagojevich tapes issue, which Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti was on your air for about 8 minutes yesterday and used that line twice because they have so little else to talk about. And so I think there's a good working relationship with J.B. Pritzker, and I think he'll be a pretty good governor.
When you talked about the budget a couple of moments ago, because I almost wonder if semantics, how much this plays a role, and you hear people criticize, this is not a budget, this is a spending plan. try, you know, and saying, well, you don't, there are, there, because it doesn't matter if you're doing a budget in the scenario that we are in Illinois, you do have to anticipate certain levels of income and things along that line. But I mean, in your mind, do you use the word balance when you talk about a budget in Illinois?
You know, I don't, only because, you know, there's so many variables. I mean, it might on paper be balanced in May when it's passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, but there's going to be fluctuations up and down the line. You know, this past year, Illinois took in more money because of what happened with the federal tax. It's a spending plan, but more importantly, Illinois has a set of laws on the books that were passed by the legislature, signed by governors, that usually require some level of spending. There are court decisions that require some level of spending. So that's where the first step in this ballet begins. There's programs and services that law and courts and the federal government require, and that's where you need to design how much money you need. And some people forget all that. They make it sound like, oh, you know, well, we got to have a revenue estimate. We got to have a cut in spending. If you're going to cut spending, you got to cut programs and services. You got to say, oh, that law, we're going to repeal that law. And most people, regardless of party, regardless of region, don't want to do that.
It's interesting. I was speaking with a city manager a couple of years back, and he says the fact is that taxpayers constantly want more services from their government while wanting to, well, of course, not pay for them. And he says this is one of the great truths of life, that people are always expecting more, and we're not in a position to give it in this state.
You want the roads smooth. You want the police and fire to show up when there's a problem. You want the water to come out of the tap, the snow plowed, what have you. Yeah, you'd prefer that it not cost so much. But in this day and age, the people who do those jobs have to go to the same stores that you and I shop in, and we got to pay the same prices.
Right.
So it's a never-ending circle of stuff, right?
Right. I'm kind of curious about something, Steve. In Springfield, you know, when things are happening, like the Board of Trustees at SIU, and I know you have, you know, with your boys here, that you have an intimate knowledge, you know, SIU, you come here regularly. I was wondering what effect, if anything, the recent activities, the Board of Trustees, the decision whether to let the president of SIU go, and whether the committee can even have a meeting. Do people in Springfield hear this, and what do they think about it when they do?
You know, I, you're right, I do have an interest. I do have two sons there now. Mitch may be up and listening. I just told him about my this auspicious appearance. They see it, and they scratch their heads because it is a negative, disruptive story that I don't know who is orchestrating what's going on now. But they need to realize that that does not help improve the image of the university, the SIU system, or the Carbondale campus in the minds of policymakers all over this, you know, from all over the state. Because they see that happening there, they wonder, what's going on down there? Why are they doing that? We don't see that happening in Northern or Western or, you know, some of the other schools.
Right. You know,
and so it's just... It doesn't help, and it doesn't help in the process of rebuilding enrollment. And that, as I've said to you and to my associates on the alumni board and other places, ought to be job one, plain and simple.
You know, one of the other items I've been watching, in the Republicans first picking a party head and the difficulty they had coming to that, they basically had some type of truce, I think, to be able to get an agreement here. But I did think it was, are there 18-member community, all women committee, I should say, to pick the head of the Democratic Party? I mean, how does that play into this Me Too movement and the harassment accusations?
Well, I think it's another step by the Speaker to recognize all of that and ask the elected women of the State Central Committee and Juliana Stratton, who's the Pritzker candidate, the state representative, and JB's candidate for lieutenant governor, to sit down and receive resumes and go through them and offer recommendations. I think that's important. I'm guessing it probably means that the next executive director would be a woman, but not a given. I mean, I'm sure there'll be men who apply.
Right.
But I think that's another important effort to communicate with people and say, here's the way we want to operate. We're not going to be tolerant of all these different awful things that have come up. And it started with Harvey Weinstein, but it's obviously spread to, I believe, just about every aspect of every corner of our society. and it really it is a problem that people are addressing, and it's going to take a while to straighten out. And part of it's going to take a while to re-educate people or get them to understand what is right or wrong in 2018 and going forward.